All right. Good evening. Oh, I haven't seen you guys in so long. Great. Wanted to welcome myself back. Great to be back. I know that while I was running around there, it's Yisrael, and every now and then I would say, "Oh, I gotta prepare." No, not this week. I'm good. I don't have to prepare for this week. But we are back, and I wanted to share with you an amazing, it's deep, but an amazing insight into Parshas Vayetze. Parshas Vayetze, last week's Torah portion, there's so many parts to focus on, but I think what stood out for me is one little exchange about our patriarch Jacob. Yaakov, as we know, had to run away because he, quote unquote, stole the blessings that Esav thought were destined for him, and Esav swore that he was going to kill him. So Yaakov has to go and find himself a wife and to make sure that he's safe. So fine, he gets to this well. He gets to the well, and he is, and who does he see there? None other than Rachel, right? Sees Rachel. Here's what happens. I'm going to read you the text. If you want, it's in chapter 29. So Jacob lifted his feet, went toward the land of the Easterners. He looked, and behold, a well in the field. Behold, three flocks of sheep lay there beside it, for from that well they would water the flocks. And here's what's strange. And the stone over the mouth of the well was large. When all of the flocks would be assembled there, they would roll the stone from the mouth of the well and water the sheep. Then they would put back the stone over the mouth of the well in its place. It seems as though this was the public watering hole. And everybody would bring their flock to give them to drink. The problem is that they had this massive boulder sitting on top of the well. And it took all the shepherds to come at one time. One person couldn't do it. So they waited until all the shepherds brought their flock, rolled it off, gave their flock to drink, and then rolled it back on. Okay. Interesting phenomenon. Jacob says to them, he doesn't know these people from Adam. He says to them, "My brothers, where are you from?" "Oh, we're from Haran." He said, "Oh, you know Lavan, the son of Nachor? Sure, we know him." And he said, "Is it well with him?" He says, "Yeah, everything's good. Oh, and look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the flock." Okay? He says to them, and he gives them Musar. He gives them a rebuke. And he says to them, "Look, the day is still long. It's not yet time to bring the livestock in, water the flock, and keep on grazing. Day's not over. Why are you calling it quits for the day? Still early." They said, "No, we're not able to until all the flocks will have been gathered and they'll roll the stone off the mouth of the well and then we'll water the flock. There's only 10 of us here, or 12 of us, I don't know, however many. We need everybody. That's why we're standing around doing nothing." Well, right? Sounds like if you've ever been an employer, you know, right? "Well, we're just waiting for the coffee to brew." Get back to work. Okay. Fine. Here's what the Torah says. While he was still speaking with them, Rachel had arrived with her father's flock, for she was a shepherdess. And it was when Yaakov saw Rachel, the daughter of Lavan, his mother's brother, and the flock of Lavan, his mother's brother, Jacob came forward and rolled the stone off the mouth of the well and watered the sheep of Lavan, his mother's brother. Single-handedly, Yaakov on his own is able to roll off this stone, give the drink to all of Lavan's flock that Rachel is shepherding, and everything's great. Okay, then he kissed Rachel, he raised his eyes, he raised his voice, and he cried. Yaakov told Rachel he was his father's relative and that he was Rivka's son. She ran and told her father, and okay, we move on with the story. In the course of reading this on Shabbos, when we're going through it relatively quickly, I don't think we really take the time to ask ourselves some basic questions. Most people, when they take the time, they ask about how did he kiss her so quickly? Hey, I thought the Torah's not. I know. Maybe another time we'll deal with it. It's a whole
How did he
different
get the
discussion.
stone off?
But what's with the
Maybe
rolling
quiet.
off of the stones? Stone. Maybe this was the original magazine. I don't know. Maybe this was the impetus for the name of the rock group. I don't know. But something about the Torah feels compelled to tell me about that this is how the system was. And dun, 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 Super Jacob to the rescue. He single-handedly rolled off the boulder, gave the flock to drink, and everything is great. Why do I need to know this? Of what significance is any of this? Do you ever wonder about this? No, because you probably didn't pay attention to this like I didn't until I had to read it. You hear my question though? Like, seriously, what's the message we're supposed to be doing with all of this?
Wouldn't it mean that God was with Jacob and helped him move the rock so that
Let's even
people would
say
notice
yes.
him?
Let's even say yes. This is what's going to, is this God's way of saying, I'm going to show studly Jacob that Rachel is going to fall madly in love with. Why? Because he's so strong. Really? This is the Torah's idea of chivalry? I could think of 100 other ways. I mean, Yaakov's not known for his strength. It's not his thing. He's a tent dweller. He's not the hunter. Like, okay, so fine. So he's strong. This is going to impress Rachel.
I'm stuck with another place even before this question, and this might be a really stupid question, but it occurs to me the first time that the well was found or whatever, and there's this big boulder, and it takes all of these people to remove it.
Why'd
Why
they put it
did
back
they
on?
put it back
Right.
on?
The answer is, it's a good question. It's not stupid at all. It's a great question. The answer is they don't trust each other. They don't trust each other. They think if they leave it uncovered, people who don't belong there are going to come, or they're going to take all of it. They want to make sure that everybody's got their share, so nobody's trusting anybody.
Okay.
Yeah. Welcome to society. Okay. So let's examine something. Let me start with the following. Later on in the Torah, later on, like all the way towards the end of Parshas Vayechi, the last one in the book of Bereishis, the Torah gives our patriarch Yaakov a different title or a different name. The Torah uses the word midei from the hands of Avir Yaakov, Abir. Abir Yaakov also has to do with strength, but it's the only place in the Torah that Yaakov's given this title, Avir Yaakov. What is so significant? Maybe we can talk more, but the Arizal, who I've mentioned in the past, the Arizal, the great Kabbalist, Reb Yitzchak Luria, he tells us that the letters Avir Yaakov, Aleph, Bet, Yud, Resh, Avir, Yud, Ayin, Kuf, Bez, Yaakov are the same letters as Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva. Now, again, none of us, I'll speak for myself, I'm not on a level of really understanding and appreciating the deep meaning that the Arizal is trying to convey. But something is being conveyed here that there is something about Yaakov Avinu, patriarch Jacob, that is connected in a very profound way with Rabbi Akiva. That is what the Arizal is telling us. I'm just curious. As soon as I say this, does anything come to mind between a similarity with Yaakov and Rabbi Akiva? Anything come to mind? Okay. What was Yaakov's, I'll call her the main wife, Yaakov's favorite. What was her name? Rachel.
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 Rachel. Correct. What was Rabbi Akiva's wife's name?
I'm going to guess Rachel.
Yes, it is Rachel. It is Rachel. Yes, it is. In fact, the Talmud tells us a couple of interesting stories about her. She comes from a very wealthy family. Believe it or not. Yeah, her father, who was known as Kalba Savua, another time we'll talk about it, but he was one of the wealthiest men in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim. Found out when Rachel met Rabbi Akiva. Obviously, he was not Rabbi Akiva yet. He was just Akiva. And this Akiva, most of us know the story, was an unlearned shepherd. Didn't know an aleph from a bet. She saw something in him that she saw his potential. And so she basically said he wanted to date her, marry her. She was a very pretty woman. And she basically said, I'll only marry you on condition that you start exploring Judaism and you take it seriously. Second part of the story is Rabbi Akiva. What made him decide eventually to explore his Judaism? We've all heard the story, maybe you don't recall, but he was out shepherding the flock. He was a shepherd and he came to a well. Michelle's got it already, right? Came to a well, and what did he see? He saw a hole. He saw a hole that was bored through the rock. And he asked himself, how did that happen? And he noticed that every few moments, a drop of water, a drop of water would drip from the well, either from the pail, the rope, I don't know, a whole different discussion as to what it was. But basically, a drop of water consistently would fall into on that spot on the stone. And as we know, that water over time can erode even hard stone. And he figured that that must be it. And he made the following mental argument. In Hebrew, we call it, Jeff, a kal v'chomer. He made the following fortiori argument, as they translate it. He said, if water, which is so soft and so malleable and so flexible and is really it's nothing, can penetrate a heart, excuse me, a stone that is so hard. Wow. They keep talking about these words of Torah, which are so strong, can certainly penetrate a soft heart like mine. And he made the argument that, yeah, I have to do this. Oh, I'm already so old. No, if water can over time consistently penetrate something as hard as a rock, then the words of Torah that are like fire can certainly penetrate my heart. And that was the argument he was willing to start learning with. The Arizal tells us the following, that Rabbi Akiva was a Gilgal. His neshama, his soul, Yaakov's soul, was reincarnated into Rabbi Akiva. Years and years and years later, we talked about this in other classes, of where a soul, it's possible, if the job hasn't been finished, the soul comes back again at another point into another body to finish the job. It seems as though the Arizal tells us that Yaakov's soul was reincarnated into Rabbi Akiva. Hence, the allusion in the Torah itself, when it gives Yaakov the title Avir Yaakov, it's a reference, those same letters of Rabbi Akiva. Yaakov was reincarnated much later into Rabbi Akiva. Now, what we find are very interesting similarities. It's not just cool that they both married a woman named Rachel. What is interesting is who saved whom. See, in our story in the Parsha, Yaakov is the one who grows up in a home of Kedusha, in a home of sanctity, right? He has his parents, Yitzchak and Rivka, very holy, righteous people. Yes, he has a brother, Esav, who's out to kill him, but he grows up, so to say, on the right side of the tracks. What's Rachel's story? Where does she grow up? She grows up in the house of Lavan. Lavan, the trickster. This is Lavan, the one who at every turn is trying to destroy, is trying to make, If you have to pick a good and evil, you would put Yaakov, Yitzchak and Rivka on the good side, and Lavan and Bethuel on the other side. They're not exactly the people you would name your kid after. So in one regard, Yaakov, who represents the spark of holiness, redeems and saves Rachel from within the environment of impurity, the house of Lavan. Yaakov saves Rachel. In the twist, in the story of Rabbi Akiva, who saved whom?
I'm not going to say this, Rabbi
Ah,
Akiva.
Rachel, who grows up a Jewish woman, a righteous Jewish woman, goes ahead and saves an ignorant Akiva who has a certain hatred towards Judaism at one point. Rabbi Akiva is quoted as saying that before I became involved with my Judaism, his terminology was, let's see if I can find it here. But his term is that if I saw a Talmud Chacham, if I saw a sage, I would hate him and I would want to bite him. He had a certain negativity towards it. Who saves whom? Rachel saves Rabbi Akiva. So it's almost like the complete circle. It starts with Yaakov coming from the side of sanctity, reaching in to save Rachel, and later it's Rachel who saves Akiva. Rachel who saves Rabbi Akiva. But it goes even further than that. What's up with this rolling of the stone, of the rock? Ah, see, you already have pieces of information. What inspired Rabbi Akiva? What inspired him to get involved with his Judaism?
The
The
rock. Water on the
rock.
rock.
The
The water on
water,
the stone.
the water from a well regarding a rock. Hinted at a story. If you now know that Rabbi Akiva is ultimately going to be the replacement or the future, I'll put it that way, the future of Yaakov, then perhaps when the Torah uses the terminology, the Torah uses the following terminology. Here it is, verse 10. And it was when Jacob saw Rachel, daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the flock of Laban's brother, Jacob came forward and rolled the stone off the mouth of the well. In Hebrew, it's Vayogel es ha'even. Literally, he rolled the stone, me'al pi ha'be'er, from on top of the mouth of the well. Okay? But the word Vayogel, while it could mean to roll, also means to reveal. Like we have the terminology when we talk about immoral behavior, one of the three cardinal sins is called gilui arayot, a revealing, an exposing of one's nakedness, right? That's called gilui arayot. Here, we're coming up, not yet, but Purim. What do we read on Purim? What's the name of the book we read?
Megillah Esther.
Megillat Esther. So literally means the scroll. Why? Because the same thing. Vayo means to roll. As a po, right? Because it's something that you roll up. It's not, right? So it's called a Megillah, but it also means to reveal. Megillat Esther means the revealing of that which is hidden, which is what the story of Purim is all about. So on a deeper level, the word Vayogel es ha'aven doesn't only mean and he rolled off the stone, he revealed something about the stone by the mouth of the well, which is a reference to the story of Rabbi Akiva. He revealed to Rachel that the future of us is to have a person, ultimately, Rabbi Akiva, who will take these ideals of ours, right, and take it to the next level, which we'll see in a moment. He revealed to her It wasn't his super strength that impressed Rachel. It's the idea that the future, there would be a Rabbi Akiva that will take our job, what we are trying to accomplish here, and take it to the next level at a future time. He was hinting to her about the future of Rabbi Akiva. What do we know else about? What was at the end of Yaakov's life? Right? We'll try one more. Let's tie one more piece in. The end of Yaakov's life, he calls together all of his children and he gives them each a bracha. Right? Each one of them individually and then collectively, he gives them all a bracha. Before he's able to do that, he gathers them all together and then he stops. He stops. The Torah tells us that he questioned them. What was the question? Rashi tells us that he felt the divine spirit left him. As all of his children gathered around him, he felt that there was a downgrade in spiritual status, and he was frightened. Maybe, he said, one of my children or more are not worthy, similar to my father and grandfather. My father Yitzchak had me, but also had an Esav. My grandfather Avraham had a Yitzchak, but he also had a Yishmael. Maybe my family also has. We have 12 sons. Maybe only 11 of them are worthy. Maybe only 10. I feel like here it is at the end of my life. I want to give over. I want to tell them certain, reveal to them certain, insights and secrets about the future, and God has left me. So he questions them. And you know what they respond? Famously, you all know it. You say
Shema.
it every day.
Shema Israel.
Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. They all responded. Now watch how we play on words here. We translate it as, "Listen, O Israel," and it's referring to the Jewish people. Shema Yisrael, listen, Jewish people. This is a statement we make. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem is our God, Hashem Echad, God is one. But on a deeper level, all of the sons are turning and saying, Shema Yisrael, listen, Dad. Because Yaakov's other name is Yisrael. No, listen, Dad. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem is our God also. We believe Hashem Echad. What did Yaakov respond?
Baruch Shem
Baruch
Kavod.
Shem, excellent, Fred. Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuto Le'olam
Which is why we say that a little softly.
Va'ed. Oh, one second. Don't steal my thunder here. He says, the kids
Learned it
say,
from
all
you.
the 12 tribes say, Shema Yisrael, and he responds, Baruch Shem. But why then do we say it quietly? We should say it out loud, the same way Yaakov did. Says Michelle. Yeah, the answer is because while you and I know this story, you and I have been at privy to hear the Medrash that told us about this conversation, the words Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad being uttered are not until much later in the Torah by Moshe. Moshe is the one who is recorded in the Torah as saying these words. Now, could he have gotten it from earlier? Yes, absolutely. But in the Torah itself, it has Moshe talking to the Jewish people and saying, hey, listen up. Shema Yisrael, listen, Jewish people. Don't ever forget. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. There's no response of Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso Le'olam Va'ed there. So says the Talmud, now we're in a quandary. What should we do? Should we go ahead and say it out loud? Well, that would be a slap in the face to Moshe. He didn't say Baruch Shem. If we don't say it, because Moshe didn't say it, but that would be a slap in the face to Yaakov, who did say Baruch Shem out loud. What should we do? Hence, a compromise is we say it, but quietly. That is the source for why we do it the way we do it. We say Shema Yisrael out loud, and then we say Baruch Shem quietly, silently. Now you know. But what's interesting is that if Yaakov is the one who originated this phrase with Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad and Baruch Shem Kavod is his response, then what comes out is fascinating. What is the end of Rabbi Akiva's life? What happened to him?
He was martyred.
Yes, during the times of the Romans. It was during a time period where teaching Torah was forbidden under Roman persecution, and Rabbi Akiva refused, obviously, to adhere to that. And he was captured. He was captured by the Romans. And yes, he was murdered in a very terrible way. He terrible.
In a Torah, wasn't he, and burned?
No. No. What?
No. Like...
Yeah, he was tortured in his skin. He took an iron rake and they flayed his skin off. Beyond. But what's interesting is the Talmud doesn't just tell us stories for no reason. It tells us this story about Rabbi Akiva's death. And it says very clearly that his students, when he was suffering terribly, they asked him, Rebbe, what's going on? Why are you not angry? Why are you not crying? Why are you not, overwhelmed by all of this? And he said, do you not say the Shema? Of course we say the Shema, Rebbe. He says, what does it say in the Shema? It says, and you shall love Hashem your God, b'chol levavacha, u'v'chol nafshecha, u'v'chol me'odecha, with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. What does it mean with all your soul? That means even to the extent where God is taking your soul, you still have to be in that positive mood. You have to love Hashem even under those most trying and difficult circumstances. The Talmud says that Rabbi Akiva felt his moment of death was coming. And what are the last words that he says? Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu. And with the words Hashem Echad, his soul left. He died. The connection between Yaakov Avinu, Jacob our patriarch, the originator of that phrase of Shema Yisrael, being played out on a stage with Rabbi Akiva, future generations being expressed that way with his dying breath, you can't ignore a coincidence like that. With the Arizal's teaching that Rabbi Akiva is the reincarnation of Yaakov, it makes perfect sense. That's, the phrase that pays when you talk about Yaakov. It's reiterated again in Rabbi Akiva. But there's one more piece to this, one small piece. Rabbi Akiva's life as a Jew began with what we called a kal v'chomer. He made an argument, a logical argument. If it's true in this circumstance, then for sure in that circumstance, right? We find such a logical argument throughout. If I'm able to buy something worth $100, then for sure I can buy something worth $50. That's a logical argument. Yes? If it applies in the more challenging case, then it certainly applies in the simpler case. Rabbi Akiva made that argument. If water, which is so soft, can penetrate a hard rock, then certainly words of Torah, which are stronger than water, can penetrate something that's less strong than a rock. Right? You follow the argument? That's called a kal v'chomer, an easier and harder. It's an argument, a logical argument. Rabbi Akiva, when he was asked why he was teaching Torah, that ultimately he was imprisoned and killed for, he was asked, why are you doing this? Why are you teaching Torah publicly? Do you not know the Romans are going to find you? The Romans are going to persecute you and kill you? He made the following argument. He says, I'll give you an analogy. I'll give you a parable. Many of you have heard this before. The fish in the sea were scattered, were running. They were like, in Yiddish we say, zittering. They were nervous and they were like jumpy all over the place. And the fox on the bank of the river sees them and says, "Why are you running around like this?" They say, "Because the fisherman's net has been cast, and we're afraid to get caught up in the net." So the fox looks at them and says, "I have a great advice for you, a great idea. Why don't you come out of the water, join me here on dry land, and we'll be together? The fisherman's net won't get you." So the fish look at the fox and they say, "You're the clever one. That's idiotic. If in a place where we can survive, where we have to live, we're under pressure, okay. If we're going to be going to a place where we're certainly going to die on dry land, forget it. Then we stand no chance." Right? The same kind of logical argument. If in water where we stand a chance to survive, we're under the challenge, maybe we'll be caught, maybe we won't. On dry land, we're for sure gonna die. There's no chance. Rabbi Kiva turned to the fellow and he said, "If I teach and learn Torah, maybe I'll be caught, maybe I won't, but this is our only survival. That's what means being Jewish, connecting to Torah. Okay, maybe we will, maybe we won't. But if I give it up and I disconnect from Torah, I stand no chance." The same kind of kal vachomer, the same kind of logical argument. This is the beginning of Rabbi Akiva's life, and that is the end of Rabbi Akiva's life. It starts and ends with that logical argument. He got started because of the stone, the water drop hitting the stone, and made the logical argument. And his ending of life was also with the logical argument that no matter what the circumstances, no matter what the challenge is, I cannot disconnect from Torah. It's an impossibility. Because if in a place when I am connected to Torah, there's a question, maybe I will, maybe I won't. If I disconnect, it's absolute certainty that I will not survive. And that's true for the Jewish people. I thought this would be, for me, an appropriate topic for tonight. After having gone to Eretz Yisrael, having gone down to Gaza and seeing with my own two eyes, right, the devastation and destruction of October 7th. This is the reminder. No matter what challenge God has in store for us, and October 7th is something that we still are having difficulty wrapping our heads around, and it might be for quite some time. We may never know until, who knows, the Mashiach. But one thing I will tell you is it's not just the resiliency of the Jewish people, which it is. It's unbelievable to see the people down there. They just put one foot in front of the other. They just don't give up. It's an amazing phenomenon. Most of us, I venture to say all of us, would be broken beyond having even just seen it, let alone experience it. But the people, the Jewish people, are the story of Rabbi Akiva. We are the story of understanding that we are the fish in water. Yes, sometimes the fisherman's net catches us and we do suffer. And Hashem allowed Hamas to come in and do the atrocities they did. Why? I don't know. But it did happen. But if we give it up, if we turn our backs to God, we stand zero chance. And I'm telling you, having just got off the plane, the land of Israel is booming. There is so much construction everywhere. It's ridiculous. As a kid growing up, I always heard the joke that the national bird for Israel is the crane.
Rain.
But I'm telling you, I went north, I went south, I went throughout Jerusalem. I'm telling you, it's nuts. The buildings are going up and they're being sold and people are moving. Eretz Yisrael Baruch Hashem is thriving. Torah is alive and well. Judaism is alive and well. It's amazing to see. It's that resiliency that Rabbi Akiva saw. We have to make that same kal vachomer. We have to make that same logical argument. Yes, it's tough. Yes, it's challenging. Do I have answers to my questions? No. But if I give it up, if I turn my back on it, then I'm like the fish coming out to be on shore with the fox. I'm DOA. I'm dead on arrival. There's no hope whatsoever. This is the message, and this is perhaps the deeper meaning. When Yaakov gets to the well, he's not showing off his muscles. The Torah is not telling us about the chivalry. He blew her away, and Rachel just fell madly in love with him because he was so strong. No. On a deeper level, Yaakov was showing Rachel what a future holds for us, what the future of the greatest, perhaps one of the greatest Torah teachers of all time, Rabbi Akiva, who had the ability to teach Torah and to see insights in Torah, even the crowns of every letter, he saw insights. It's not for tonight, but they bring down in many sources that Moshe Rabbeinu, the great Moshe, reached the 49th level of understanding, 49 out of 50. Moshe only got, quote unquote, 49. Rabbi Akiva hit 50. That's the greatness. Rabbi Akiva was somebody we can't even begin to fathom. But what's his humble beginning? Age 40, he learned an aleph from a bet. And look what he became. Ladies and gentlemen, nobody is too far gone. Nobody is too old. Nobody has any excuse in the world not to connect and learn Torah. Nobody. Rabbi Akiva proves it again and again and again. This is perhaps the message here. When it says, and he rolled off. Sorry. By Yogel Esau Evan, and he rolled off the stone. It could also be translated as, and he revealed the secret of the stone, a reference to Rabbi Akiva, as the name that we saw, Avir Yaakov, are the same letters as Rabbi Akiva. This is a nice, a different take on this story that I think maybe we can think about, and to perhaps learn this lesson of the great Rabbi Akiva. Questions? Thoughts, ideas. Yes, Robin.
Try and connect. So when Yaakov, his sons are the ones who said the Shema, and he said the response, right, quietly.
Correct.
But then Rabbi Akiva actually said the Shema. So I'm
Correct.
trying to
But
connect.
the but
Is he sort of
yes.
saying that for Rabbi Akiva? Is that sort of what the
We're saying
connection is?
that the concept of someone saying Shema or causing Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad is due to the story regarding Yaakov. You're right. It's his sons who said the phrase Shema Yisrael, but it was in reference to him asking, perhaps there's somebody amongst us that is not worthy of all of this. Their response was Shema Yisrael. That is true.
Okay, so I'm trying to connect that to Rabbi Akiva saying the Shema.
It's the phrase Shema Yisrael and Baruch Shem go together is attributed to the story regarding Yaakov. That's the story at the end of his life.
Intensified with both and missile. Could it be that he was
Jeff, you got to put it
right
on mute.
that was ordered could it be that when
Thanks.
he was responding that he was almost like responding in essence for the future for Rabbi Akiva saying the Shema and he was responding Yaakov?
I don't know if I would phrase it that way. I'm just saying that the story of the origin of Shema Yisrael, the origin, the original source for where that phrase comes from, is in reference to the story of Yaakov interacting with his kids. That story is played out again with Rabbi Akiva.
Are they repopulating that part of Israel that you went to visit?
So there, it's hard to say. There will be, I don't know if it's been put in effect yet, but my understanding is, like in as is often the case when there are terrorist attacks, the response is always rebuilding and getting more people there. So I had heard, I don't know if it's true, but the government often offers a significant discount on housing when they are built for people to move down there. But I don't know if that's happened yet. I suspect that certain areas, I can't say for sure, but my heart tells me that Nova, that area, is going to remain a memorial, and that's not going to get rebuilt in any way, shape, or form. That's just that's there to stay. That's a memorial. The kibbutzim are all rebuilding. They really are. Maybe certain places that they're going to leave as a memorial, but they're back to work. I mean, you can see, Jeff, the winter is the time. It's ironic here in the States. We always think of the winter as everything is bleak and dreary and brown and right. In Israel, as soon as it starts raining, which is the rainy season now, winter, everything starts turning green. It's amazing. So you can see the contrast between all the kibbutzim that we oversaw and yet to look at. There's green already. It's like stuff is growing. People are busy working the fields again. Just on the other side, Gaza is nothing but an absolute mess. There's nothing. Even areas that have not been bombed or taken, there's no green anywhere. It's just one brown blah. It's an amazing contrast. I mean, everything in the south, I mean, think about it. I don't have to tell you, you all know this. It's miraculous. It's an absolute miracle of what grows down south. It's a desert, for goodness sakes. But Hashem has blessed us. The ingenuity and the promise that it's our land has just come to fruition in front of our eyes. Areas that nobody, why did we end up with certain places? Do you have any idea the history? Why certain areas of Israel were given to us as part of the plan? You know why? It's because it was a wasteland. They said nothing will grow here. Let's give it to the Jews. Okay, now we're laughing because Hashem blessed us and gave us the ingenuity to figure out how to do it. It's unbelievable. Green.
Even Gaza was green before they gave it
Yes,
back.
that's correct. We gave it to them green. We gave it to them green. That's correct. Any other thoughts, ideas, questions? Okay, wonderful. All right. So God willing, next week we'll continue. What's after Vayetze? Vayishlach. Right? Next week we'll talk about Parshas Vayishlach. Also, a lot of stuff going on in that Parsha. But I haven't decided what we'll talk about yet. All right? All right. Have a great rest of the week, everyone.